Hi everyone, welcome to Little Bit Weebish. This is the podcast where I, Megan Cardenas, chat with my friends about anime that I love episode by episode. And of course, we are still going at it with Jujutsu Kaisen with Sam. Sam, how are you?
I'm good. I'm tired, but I'm good. I'm good.
Oh my gosh, I am so tired. I need to tell everyone. My husband and I are insane, and we are not only putting in new baseboards in our house, we are also painting cabinets right before my husband goes on a trip and before a friend comes to visit me. We're insane. So, like, the exhaustion level is, like, at an all-time low right now.
Oh, I've definitely been there.
Yeah, but you know what? We're going to talk about Jujutsu Kaisen. It's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. And we love it. So it's going to be episodes 13 through 15. So I hope everyone's already had the chance to watch those, hopefully, if you want to be spoiler free. But let's dive right into episode 13, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So episode 13, the title is Tomorrow. And for a quick summary, Nanami aids Itadori in his fight with Mahito. And each party tries to figure out the other goal of the other person or the limitations. And Mahito throws transfigured humans to attack Yuji while he fights Nanami. And despite Itadori's personal stance to not kill, the transfigured humans beg to be killed and Mahito just laughs. Now, Oh, it was so bad. And Itadori and Nanami, they coordinate the stream of attacks. And Mahito, he releases his domain expansion, self-embodiment of perfection, and surrounds Nanami, but not Itadori. And things don't look for Nanami, literally in the palm of Mahito's hands, which that is the creepiest domain I've ever seen.
So gross. Yeah, like, it like looks real weird.
It's like, this is nightmare fuel. Like, just horrible. And then, is it just my imagination, or did I have a fever dream where there were eyeballs on the hands at one point looking at Nanami?
Yeah, so he says something about, like, okay, so there is one point when Mahito is talking and he's like, ooh, I'm gonna need to keep an eye on him. And he, as he's fighting Nanami, and he, like, has an eyeball pop out in his
palm. Oh my
gosh,
yes. Okay, all right. So my brain was remembering it correctly. That made it all the better. I was like, this is horrible. Ew. Okay. But things basically don't look good for Nanami. And he reflects on his life away from being a sorcerer, where he just enjoyed a ham and cheese sandwich at the bakery. And, you know, he had a regular office job with a skeezy boss. And, you know, all he cared about was money. But when talking to the bakery girl, he just, like, takes this curse off her shoulder. And that act got Nanami to call JoJo and say, hey, I'm going to come back as a sorcerer. So now, just before Mahito takes out Nanami, Itadori bursts through the domain, and it looks like they're all witnessing now at this point, with this whole, like, bursting through, that now Sukuna is taking down Mahito, like, cutting him. It's crazy. And Mahito is on the brink of death, and Itadori lunges an attack, and with a punch, Mahito, he, like, pops like a balloon and he escapes into the sewers.
Yeah. Now
back at the base, Itadori tells Nanami that he did end up killing someone and begins to question what is a proper death. And Nanami says he doesn't know the answer. Junpei's school then starts to take corrective action against bullies. And rightfully so, that's a wrap on the summary.
Yeah. That was such a sad ending to me. Like, sorry, kid, no hope here. Like, I can't give you an answer either, kind of a thing.
Well, and also, like, with Junpei's school, it's like, okay, good for you guys, but also, a little too late, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, it was a very sad episode in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But for this theme, though, I want to expound on what it, what makes a proper death, and also try to, tying it to the previous discussions on Worthy to Save. At this point with this episode, I really feel like now we're seeing a connection between those two things. So, Itadori, basically, he finally kills someone, a transfigured human. Like, we know that that person is not really who they were. You know, they are forever changed as they know it. But we can assume that this is the person who Itadori is referring to, the one who begged to be killed. It's still yeah. tore at Itadori. And he equated that he'd been trying to keep from pulling the trigger, or keeping that trigger from being pulled, and now he's done that. Anonymy, he says, even if all good people properly die in peace and all evil people were punished in death, the problem would be that most people in this world are neither good, all good, nor all evil. Death is a final destination for all of us, but no one dies in the same death. Guiding all of them to their proper end would be quite arduous. I personally wouldn't recommend it. So Nanami, he makes this good point that no one is all good or all bad. Everyone is flawed, and they're on this spectrum of good and evil. So who is worthy to die in peace or worthy to die in punishment, deserves to die in punishment? That kind of begs the question. We see this same thought process paralleled with the students at the juvenile detention center a few episodes ago, where Itadori, he wanted to collect all the victims, save them if they were still alive, because they were people. But we saw mm-hmm. Fushiguro, who was on the exact opposite, just get in, get out, saying that they essentially all deserve to die because they were at that center. They must have done something bad to justify them being there in the first place. So there's this worthiness to a certain kind of death, a worthiness of rescue, which relies on this house of cards determined by goodness and that person's standard of goodness that's happening.
I think that there's also kind of a delineation here that, like, having a we're kind of getting a separation for Itadori in that there can be a delineation between somebody having a proper death and somebody being good enough to have a proper death.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's, before, I feel like he was saving indiscriminately. So he was just saving everybody that he could.
Right.
And now there's kind of this question. And I think it's because of Megumi mm-hmm. that he has this question now of, like, well, who deserves to have a proper death? And I think that they've broken down the question and kind of broken down different parts instead of just kind of lumping it all together at this point. Like, he's definitely learning more, and he's learning that maybe just saving indiscriminately is better than trying to judge somebody on good or bad. And then, like, then what is the proper death? Is it killing somebody so that they don't have to suffer anymore? Or is it letting them live based on the lot that they lived in life? Because you can't really take, I mean, at least in this example of the transfigured spirits or the transfigured humans, they, like, if he doesn't kill them, they're never going to have a proper death. Period.
Right.
Because they're never going to be able to be changed back into humans and live a happy life anymore. So, like, what's the next best thing? And I think that that's kind of what he's learning, is that a proper death is what's the best scenario and not necessarily what's the ideal death. Does that make sense?
Right. Oh, it absolutely does. And you can see that as Itadori has been more exposed to this world of curses and what that can mean for the safety or happiness or just life of humans, and probably experiencing his own death and just growing as a person. We've seen mm-hmm. that he has truly started to question his childish ideals, childish, but still good, still from a good place, but questioning them, to then say, well, now that I have experienced this, what does this mean? You know, how mm-hmm. how can I stay true to this thought that I held on to? But also, like, with everything I'm experiencing, how can I still honor that, you know?
Oh, for sure.
And because, like, for him, it was almost like, if you died at an old age, like my grandpa, like, that was a good death. You had mm-hmm. enough life to live, and, you know, mm-hmm. nothing bad happened to you, just old age, you know? Yeah. But then it's like, you know, now he's experienced not only, like, himself being a jujutsu sorcerer, but also he's seen people like Junpei, who were bullied, who to the extreme, and finally cracked, and then, you know, he was transfigured into this horrific creature, you know, mm-hmm. because of Mahito, and then he died, and it was a horrible way to go. But, you know, I thought about how, like, on Fushiguro's scale, at least where he is currently, Fushiguro might have thought of that as, well, you still chose to attack all the student body. Maybe you deserve to go out that way. You know, the way Fushiguro is right now on his spectrum. But with Itadori, you can see, like, that this was his friend. And, you know, the way he is viewing things and the way he's experiencing them are really making him question the whole point of it all, with proper death and saving people at the same time, you know?
Yeah. And it's also, I feel like it's also, I think, goodness, I can't talk. I think Itadori is also realizing that, like, he can't just ask other people mm-hmm. what is a proper death. I think that he's, at least from Nanami's answer, like, it's all up to you.
Yep.
Because all you can control is you and what you do. You can't control the way that the world reacts to your friend or, you know, your teacher or whatever. And it's not going to always be cut and dry. Just like what Nanami says. It's not always good. It's not always evil for a person. Like, people are blended. They do bad things, they learn. They do good things, they learn. Sometimes they don't, you know, just there's a whole bunch of things that play into it, and you can't control it.
Exactly. You just can't control it. Exactly. And in the world that they're in, with curses in abundance, you know, even with people being a wild card, I mean, curses, they attack kind of indiscriminately. So whether mm-hmm. a human deserves it or not. So basically, I think that this whole idea of a proper death, worthy to save, those kinds of themes, we are going to have it challenged throughout this series. Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to just be echoed throughout. So maybe I'm just saying, buckle up in case people are like, you've already said this, but, you know, I feel like it's going to be an echoed theme throughout the series. Just, you know.
Oh, definitely. And I think that this is definitely a different conversation than what we had when we had previously talked about a proper death. That's the great thing about Jujutsu Kaisen, is that we have evolving characters. It's not the same every time that you revisit it. Just like Attack on Titan, we had, you know, the same themes or similar themes throughout the show, but you have evolving characters that change their minds on things, and especially that they're kind of like younger characters. They're in this development stage, which is so delicious. Yes. Where they make decisions and you're like, oh, you're such a baby, and you're thinking, wait until you're an adult and realize it's not so cut and dry.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, what a sweet ideal. We'll see how it holds up, you know. Exactly. Exactly. So, but yeah, I think that that was great. And yeah, that was the theme. So Sam, let's move on to our little bonus section. You know, if there was anything else that we wanted to add, for this episode, we'll let you take it off. What did you like?
There were so many things. I think that my favorite, though, was when Itadori did confide into Nanami, or with Nanami, over killing the transfigured human. And that Nanami talked to him as a friend instead of a student. I think it helps, like, show their evolution of their relationship, because, like, I also see Nanami as a character somewhat changing in the next couple of episodes, of like not just being robotic towards other people, and kind of keeping himself, what do you call it? Not unfeeling. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
He's not keeping himself as unfeeling as before, kind of leaning into jokes, leaning into this almost sweetness between him and Itadori. And then you also have Itadori that's realizing what a benefit Nanami has been, because we all know that he loves Gojo.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. But we've seen at the beginning of the relationship with Nanami, and he's like, what is this guy? Like, he won't shut up while I'm trying to fight. And I think that he's found that Nanami, even though he's not the same as Gojo, is a really good, what do you call it, adult figure to look up to. And
I agree. Yeah, that one was really, really good. I love that also. Oh my gosh. Okay, for me, I thought it was interesting and creepy that Sukuna said that he didn't care who died as long as Fushiguro didn't, Megumi. And I'm sure that the manga readers are, like, smirking right now. Like, I know something you don't, you know? But I'm, like, ultra concerned for Fushiguro. I just am very nervous for him. But yeah, just in general, very nervous for Fushiguro. Like, the fact that Sukuna has him on his radar... terrifying.
Okay, so I thought the exact same thing. I was like, holy cow, this is further confirmation that Megumi is something more special than he thinks that he is, and he's got a lot of potential. As you were talking, I was thinking, so when he says that he doesn't care if any of them die, does that include Itadori?
I think so. I think so. He ripped out the guy's heart.
Yeah, like, I just didn't think about that while watching the show, because I was thinking, like, oh, here's Mahito and Nanami fighting. He doesn't care if either of those two. But he said any. Yeah. He didn't say, like, I don't care if either of you two die. And so, for some reason, that just blew my mind.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's his vessel. But you're right. He did rip out his heart.
So. I mean, I think so. But then it's like, well, why Fushiguro? Like, okay, again, manga readers who are smirking right now, like, all I want to know is, Sukuna, is he going to be like a Hisoka to Gon and Killua kind of thing? Or is there going to be, like, a legit thing on why he's...
I just feel like... I feel like this is a... I mean, there's, like, this... I don't want to say theory, because I feel like it's a very widely held... part because of what Tolkien said, but is this, like, where you finally hear for the first time that, like, Lord of the Rings isn't actually about Frodo, that it's about Samwise Gamgee, and you're just like,
oh,
wait, is this not about Itadori and it's all about Megumi? What? That's how I felt.
That would be a plot twist. Well, actually, because maybe this is about Fushiguro and him, because he was the one who tried to find Sukuna's finger, and he's the one who found the student who stupidly ate the finger, and now, oh my gosh, Sam!
It's the ring holder and the finger eater. They're not the main characters, guys.
Oh my gosh. Wow, well, that's a plot. I just know the manga readers just laugh so hard at us. But you know what? We do this for your entertainment. We have no idea what's happening.
Revel in it. Revel in it.
Exactly. Okay, Sam. Is there anything else that you want to add for your little bonus section?
Yes. So just one last thing. I would really encourage people to either fast forward through the credits or just watch through the credits, because there are a lot of little tidbits that I have been finding just in the last couple episodes that we've been going through, where like really key information comes in. And one of them being for me is just how deeply Megumi and Itadori care for each other. And after the credits for this one, Megumi makes like a little hot pot with meatballs for like the group of students, and they talk about how wonderful it is and how amazing the meatballs are, and he's like, oh, Itadori showed me how to make those meatballs, and they're like, wow, it's so good. And he just kind of like sits there and reminisces for a second, then they cut over to Itadori and he sneezes because somebody's talking about him, and he's making the exact same meal for Gojo, and Gojo's like, man, this is so amazing, and he's like, yeah, it's like super simple to make. Even Megumi or Fushiguro can make the meatballs. And it was just like, and then he says, I can't wait. And then Itadori says, I can't wait to see them again. And he just like, it was just so, so sweet.
Oh my gosh. I love that so much. Okay, I'm obviously going to have to go back to this specific episode and watch that, because that is so freaking cute. Oh my gosh.
Another one that's going to be in the next couple episodes that I also want to talk about. And it has to do with Miwa and Gojo.
No! Oh my gosh. Okay. Wow. The suspense is going to kill me, but okay, I'll wait for you. Oh man, so good. Well, I think that's a wrap for episode 13, so let's move on to 14.
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. We are now going to be covering episode 14, and the title is Kyoto Sister School Exchange Event Group Battle Zero. Holy cow, that's a really long title.
Very creative for the next few episodes. I'm just going to say that right now.
Exactly. But here is your really quick summary. Gojo and Nanami debrief about the last mission that Yuji went on with Nanami. It is explained that Yuji doesn't know about the finger that they found at Junpei's home, and that the finger was given to the higher-ups. So Nanami was like, I didn't tell him. I felt like it would be on his shoulders, and then he would be upset.
So smart.
So I just didn't tell him. Nanami then says that he is grateful for Gojo's foolery, specifically foolery, which sounds like such an old man. Old man word. Because Yuji will need it after the tough mission that they had. And then Gojo explains that he's grateful that Nanami was with Yuji for the mission because he was more responsible than what he would have been.
Fair.
Aww. Yuji is then brought in as a surprise to the Tokyo students after the Kyoto students had arrived. Megumi and Nobara were not as excited to see him as Yuji would have hoped. They were more like scared and mad, like, holy cow, what just happened?
It was so bad.
Oh, so bad. And then the Kyoto principal, whose name I never remember, was extremely angry with Gojo that they were kept in the dark and believed that Yuji was dead. So just, like, hold on to that little tidbit of information for the next few episodes. That being the case, the Kyoto principal told his students that their main goal is to kill Yuji, since he is an abomination, a vessel that should not be left alive. Gojo asks Yutahime.
This is how you'll remember. It's Utah, I-M-E, but it's Utahime. Yeah, so you'll remember it now.
Okay, Utahime. So Gojo asks Utahime to watch Kyoto for any cursed users, Jujutsu sorcerers specifically, who could be in cahoots with curses. And he just kind of gives her like the heads up of like, hey, you need to be searching this out on your side. Yuji also finds a place within the Tokyo team to help out with a first event. The exorcism race is what they call it. I was like, oh, what a name.
Yeah.
So after like that bomb that they dropped, which is Yuji is alive, my theme today is what to do with Yuji.
I love it.
I feel like there are quite a few times throughout this episode where Yuji's presence kind of like caused a commotion. Obviously, it should, because he hasn't been alive for 2 minutes. Or not 2 minutes, 2 months. So I thought, like, first we would hit on Gojo and Nanami. Both of them have known that Yuji has been alive pretty much this whole time. Gojo, yes, the whole time. Nanami, for the majority of it, since he's been part of the training.
Right.
So for them, they decided that it was best to keep Yuji's life under wraps so that they could train him without too many people trying to kill him. Which, as we can already see, that, like, it's a problem. Like, as soon as he pops out, Kyoto's teacher is like, gotta kill him. Gotta kill him.
Yes.
But the reason why they did this is so that they could train Yuji as much as they could and make him strong enough that he could at least have a fighting chance against cursed users, sorcerers, curses themselves. So they're trying to just build up his knowledge and strength that he hasn't been, you know, trained with his entire life, or at least used to, like the others.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As I said earlier, the Kyoto principal, he's outraged that Yuji is alive. He wants him killed. He says quite a few times, or at least kind of like summarizing what he said, that Yuji is an abomination, that a vessel could be problematic and allow Sukuna to reign in terror again. And so for that, Yuji should die. Even though he has so far shown that he can somewhat contain Sukuna and keep him in check.
Oh, man.
So he's pretty straightforward. Megumi and Nobara. I feel so bad about this.
I feel bad for everyone on this front, but continuing.
It was just...
Oh, so bad.
It was so awkward. But they showed a lot of despair at Yuji being dead throughout the last few episodes that he's been gone. But when he pops up, there really isn't like a happy, excited emotion about him being alive. Nobara specifically seems very angry to be left out on him being alive. And then probably, I'm guessing just based off of her personality, that she feels silly for grieving for him when he wasn't dead.
Oh, totally. I mean? Well, yeah, she's probably like, dude, I freaking wasted time feeling bad about you, and now you're alive? Like, I can see Nobara being very, just, like, more mad that she gave, like, any sort of sad emotion, knowing that he'd be alive.
Oh, for sure.
Like, she's just mad.
For sure. Yeah. And then, Megumi seems to be really surprised, like, this isn't real. Like, this is so surreal. At one point, he asks how Yuji has been, and he's genuinely concerned about Yuji. Like, he's like, dude, how you been?
Yeah. I think that's because, well, Fushiguro, he literally saw Sukuna rip his heart out of his body. So I think that's why he's probably like... He's not angry. He's just dumbfounded. Because he's just like,
oh, for sure.
I literally saw your heart, like, get ripped out of your chest and you fell to the ground. You are dead, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. So I think both of their reactions are spot on perfect for them and understandable on why they would like not have these happy emotions like right off the bat. Mm-hmm. But, oh my gosh, the secondhand embarrassment I feel for Itadori is bad. Massive. It's so bad. But yeah. Yeah. You can continue. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I think that like we also see that Megumi is really trying to like work hard at bringing Yuji back into everything.
Yep.
Just based off of him like saying, I think that he'd be really good in this place on our team.
Yeah.
Like second years, he's really powerful. I know he doesn't know much, but like he's very tenacious. He's very strong. He should be the one with Gojo. And so he's really trying to get Yuji just really quick on the same page as everybody else and kind of like, okay, buddy, like, let's go. And I think that's really sweet.
I do too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do too. But gosh, those beginning moments, painful.
Oh, so painful. And then the Kyoto students, they really don't know what to do with Yuji. They don't know that he's strong. Oh, wait, sorry. They know that he is strong based off what the principal has been telling them and wanting them to kill Yuji, but they don't know if they should team up to kill him or just let Todo take him on alone. Like, there's just a lot of confusion between the group.
I will say, I'm very surprised by how these students are taking the order to kill Yuji. Like, they're high school students, so, like, you know, between the ages of 14 to 18. And we learn how some of them are very much okay with it. They just, like, don't even question it. And then others are like, well, I'm going to see if they're worthy to be alive, basically, you know, Todo. Yeah. And then there are some who are like, I really don't want to do this. This is the last thing I want to do. But they still have to. It's just like this crazy little bit of like, you know, mob rule ordering where they just have mm-hmm. to kill someone. You know, I'm like, it blows my mind that they have this order from their principal, who probably has this order from these higher ups that we don't know about. It's just crazy.
No, it's a good point. And I guess that's also the way of kids though, right? Like, at what point did we start to learn that like adults don't have it all together?
Oh my gosh.
It took me a while.
Yeah.
Until I was like an adult and I'm like, oh, I don't have all the answers. These people definitely don't either.
I know, but when you're young, you're just like, man, they've got it figured out, and it's like jokes on you. Like,
yep.
you take it day by day. You know nothing as an adult. But exactly. These students, they're like, yep, you said so. I gotta mm-hmm. follow. Must be right.
Yep.
Blows my mind.
So the last person that I wanted to touch on before we go on to our bonus is that there's also Yuji. Yuji doesn't know what he needs to do with Yuji.
Yeah.
Yuji has been getting stronger as he's been away for the past 2 months, but he is finding that it is harder for him to just pop back in with his gang, like his Nobara and Megumi. They have learned to move on without him. And I'm not saying that in a mean way. I'm saying that like they learned that they need to solidify their powers together as a duo or with the second years instead of as a trio and then with the second years. So they've learned to move on. They've made friends with the second years. And his abilities, brute strength, unlike before with his trio, like his brute strength was kind of like an extra pillar mm-hmm. between the three. But he's finding out that his ability isn't as special and that it's not as needed because we have Panda, who's much more of a physical attacker. We have Maki, who's much more of a hand-to-hand combat with weapons type of person. So they have brute strength already. And he's just finding that, like, he isn't necessarily a priority anymore. They have that base kind of covered within their group. So for somebody who was really excited to be back, he's finding that it is a little bit harder than he thought.
Right. Well, even the second years when they're trying to come up with their game plan, they were like, oh, well, I guess since you're here, like, you might as well take on Toto because, mm-hmm. you know, we weren't even sure who among us would be doing, you know, the fighting with him. But hey, just try to last as long as you can, you know, but. That's
and
it.
If you don't succeed, like we didn't make a plan around you in the first place.
Exactly. So it's just like, man, that sucks. Oh, cringe. I'm getting secondhand embarrassment, but yeah.
There was a lot of that. But let's move on to bonus. And Megan, why don't you go ahead and share with us some of your bonus that you would like to share?
Yeah, well, we finally got a new opening. So hell yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's no Junpei. You know, obviously there would be no Junpei because we know it happened, but it's like the coulda woulda is just no more at this point. And it's very, very sad. It's very sad.
And that it makes sense why he had the white uniform now, because he dies.
Yeah.
And it makes me sad. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but, oh, Junpei, ripping out my heart. But, okay, I just need to say on a happier note, though, that when Gojo and Nanami chat about Itadori and, like, the fingers and if it's safe to bring him back and yada yada, I was like, oh, it's like they're Itadori's cute dad teachers, like, looking out for him and... It was just so cute. And then with the whole, like, go with the flow, like the arm wave. Oh, my gosh. It just cracked me up. It was just.
It was like, it was such a tender moment.
Yes.
So tender.
It was.
I do also want to say that, and maybe this is just from my perspective and reading into it a little bit, but I also feel like Nanami was also somewhat chastising Gojo a little bit. And just kind of reminding him, like, because with the finger and stuff like that, he said, if I wouldn't have given it to the higher-ups, you would have just fed it to him.
Oh, totally.
And in that moment, I feel like Nanami is chastising Gojo and kind of trying to remind him that, like, Yuji is also a person.
Yep.
And not just, like, a cog to make a point. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a kid. Just remember, he's a kid. And I like that.
I know. I love Nanami. I think he's my Levi of this series. I'm just throwing it out there.
Oh, man. So you and I both have one more point that we wanted to make, but I'll just say mine really quickly. I found it so precious when Megumi asked if Yuji was okay.
Oh,
it was just,
yeah.
It was that moment, I think, that Yuji was looking for. Of, like, Yuji is such a happy person and just really wants people to love him. He's that golden retriever. And Megumi kind of gave him that in his own quiet way. And I loved it.
It was precious. My next one, I'm not going to lie, I write my notes in real time. And I forgot to take out my last bullet point was like, oh my gosh, they're going to kill Itadori. Wow. And, you know, so, you know, scratch that off. We know why they're going to kill him now, but, you know, in real time, I was like, what the heck, you know? So, yeah, I think that I have talked about everything that I loved with this episode.
Okay, yeah, let's move on.
Go episode 15, and shockingly the title is Kyoto Sister School Exchange Event Group Battle 1. So I'm not gonna lie, this very much felt like Naruto's tuning exam, Hunger Games, Goblet of Fire, Triwizard Tournament. I felt all those things with this whole fighting scenario, just throwing this out there. So let the event begin. Finally, the students, they rush to take out, you know, these big curses and Kelly Todori, depending on who you are. And Toto runs into the Tokyo students and challenges them to attack him all at once. But Itadori accepts the challenge. Needless to say, Itadori does have a harder time than he anticipated. He's especially concerned that Toto made him even dumber than he already was when Toto was beating him in the head. I'm like, wow, that is craziness. But this does allow them to introduce themselves. And then in a discussion on Itadori's preferred type of woman, which is a tall woman with a nice big ass, like Jennifer Lawrence, this causes a friendship montage that never really happened in Toto's mind. But it seems that Toto's now made a new best friend, though. And suddenly, oh my gosh, it was everything, but Toto scares the crap out of me.
For sure.
But now, suddenly, more Kyoto students, they begin to attack Yuji all of a sudden. He is surrounded until somehow he switches places with the one of the Kyoto students. I think it's
Kamo.
I think it's Kamo. I need to say something. Everyone, we're going to work on the names here. We just got so many names thrown at us. We're going to work on the names. But he switched places with them, basically. And Toto tells them, essentially, to back off. He'll fight and maybe kill Itadori. And so the other students continue taking out the curses and each other, very Hunger Games, and came to the conclusion that the Kyoto students were meant to kill Itadori, the Tokyo students realized. And so they were probably doing it on their principal's orders. Now, Kasumi faces off with Maki, who proves to be a lot nicer and different than the Kyoto students. And Panda and Nobara taunt Momo to play with them. And Fushiguro fights Kamo. And I think, you know, the guy who's bossy. And of course, Itadori and Toto are still fighting as new best friends. And I just want everyone to know that this summary was a solid 2 paragraphs, probably my shortest one yet. Look at it's me. I am growing. Oh my gosh. But okay. I kind of wanted this theme to, or this time to talk about not taking others at first glance or face value.
Okay.
Because I feel like this has been very prevalent in these event, these face-offs. So Toto, he refuses to outrightly kill Itadori, you know, because of the principal. And, you know, even though his fellow students are also telling him, Toto shockingly is saying, I'm not going to outrightly kill him, because in his bizarre standard, which is crazy, Itadori would be a worthy opponent and a friend. You know, not because he's Sukuna's vessel, not because he was ordered to do so. You know, he is going to essentially figure this out by his own standard, which is fighting Itadori. And then there's Kasumi, the nice Kyoto student, which is how
is that Miwa with like the
Miwa. Yes. It also doesn't help that sometimes we get last names and sometimes we get first names, and it's very interchangeable. Kasumi Miwa, she is the nice Kyoto student, blue hair, and she simply wants to do well at the exchange event. She has no desire to kill Itadori. She is not like the others, even though she could easily be clumped in with them based on the association that she is, you know, from the enemy school. And the Tokyo second years, they just wanted Itadori to face Todo and to give them just a few minutes of a head start. They did not know how strong Itadori was or how long he could keep up with Todo. They just were kind of like, all right, well, you can just, you know, do this and we'll just take what we can get. But they truly did not believe that he could do as well as he did. So yeah, a lot of people, especially in this episode, have taken a lot of people at first glance or face value, and it's kind of biting them a little bit, biting them back in a lot of ways.
Definitely. No, I think that this is a good theme to show. It's also kind of playing back to when we were talking about Nanami and Itadori talking in the last episode of, like, there's no necessarily good and bad people. Like, some people do good things and some people do bad things, and they just kind of blend together as, like, these gray people. It's the same with both of these schools, right?
Yeah.
Like, even though we are on the Tokyo side, the majority of the time we are being shown that, like, there's also grayness on both sides.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there will be people who challenge our perception on, you know, who's one of the good ones, who's one of the bad ones, or who's, like, skilled in XYZ or whatever. We're just going to have a challenge, basically, throughout the series. And we're going to see the characters underestimating each other throughout because they do this. But yeah, Sam, I think that's a wrap for me. So let's move on to our bonus stuff.
So I didn't write this one down just because I forgot to write it down. But we're talking about the bonus information after the credits. And this is where we see, because we have Todo asking everybody for their preference in women, we also get the question of who, like, your preference in men/women. Mm-hmm. So you have, like, Maki, and you have Mai, and then you have Miwa, mm-hmm. and then you have Gojo. Okay. And Miwa is just like, I just want somebody nice. And, you know, like, goes on with all of these great attributes. And Nobara is like, I just want somebody who's not sweaty and stinky and mean and an idiot and all of this type of stuff. Wow. She's naming off a lot of negative things, but nothing positive. I don't remember what Maki and Mai said, but they were also, like, big zeros, like, just not great. And then Gojo, in his very Gojo-esque-ness, he's like, oh, you know, like, that nice girl, the one with the fun bangs. And then he's talking to Utahime, and she's going through, she's like, Maki, because Maki has bangs, Mai has bangs too. She says, Nobara. And she's like, and he's like, no. And then she says, Miwa. And he goes, ah, yeah, that one. She's really nice. And I feel like this is where, like, the fandom coming up with Gojo and Miwa came from. It's really funny. You just have to watch that end.
That is hilarious, but that totally explains it. And I just want to say this. No, I am. Because this is gonna have me bring up my bonus thing. I think that Utahime and Gojo would be cute together.
Okay, I do too. I think Miwa or Utahime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Miwa, she's just a high school student, and Gojo, I'm like, you're 26, upper 20s. So I'm like, ew, stay away from a high school student, you know? And if you're a JJK fan and you're just, like, of the younger crowd, I am telling you now, as a 30-year-old, there is a massive difference. Like, you think that you're on the same level, you're not. So yeah, I think that Utsuhime and Gojo would be so cute together. It's like the serious woman and the goofy man trope. Like, you know, I know that there are probably a billion more options, but I just think that this would be so cute together. Because, like, yeah, Utahime, I don't think she'd work with like a Nanami, because Nanami is also very serious. So I feel like,
yeah,
no, but the bantering and the quips with each other, I'm like, I love this between the two of them, you know, Utahime and Gojo. So there we go.
So just like you with like the Toto tall woman big ass thing, I feel like I responded to you and being like, yes, I feel like I'm an Utahime a lot of the times with my personality. Just like I can be very serious, and sometimes jokes go over my head, and I am married to a very goofy guy who likes to play on the times where the goofy stuff goes over my head.
Yeah.
And so honestly, I feel like that's just the relationship that my husband and I have.
You know what? Very, very true. John can be very, very cheeky in like the best playful kind of way.
We're like the reality of Utahime and Gojo. The watered down. Not as serious and not as like crazy, kooky crazy. We're real life, Utahime and Gojo.
You guys have my stamp of approval in real life, and this manga version also my stamp of approval.
There you go.
Oh my gosh. Oh man. Well, man, that's gonna bother me. Everyone who's younger, high school version, you know, high school to adult, it's very, very different. So I still don't buy it. I think that maybe he said it to bother Utahime. And I'm going to stand by that.
I think he just took the question in a different way of like, not necessarily like, who's your ideal woman, but like, what do you like? And he's like, oh, she's nice. Because he's just seen her. He's just talked to her. And he's like, oh, she's nice. Because he never says, I like her. He says, she's nice.
That's true. Also, which I think she goes to a completely different... Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, that's true. Because he did meet her briefly at the briefest moment. So yeah, there we go. I like your thing better. So, I just want to throw this out there. I hate the age gap trope. If I find there's an age gap, I'm like, I drop it like a hot potato. So this is like, no, absolutely not. Now, okay, another thing that I love, though, okay, Toto is insane. I'm like, he would creep me out. I would not want to be, like, alone by myself with him. With that said, he also cracks me up. Like, with the best friend montage and, like, the fake school daydream, he also made this very inaccurate reference to Anne Sullivan and Helen Keller, which I thought was hysterical because I'm also kind of a history nerd, but I thought that was hysterical. Like, it's just so out of pocket, and I loved all of it. It was hysterical to me.
So I think that that's really funny, but if you watch Yuji's face as Toto is coming out of his fantasy, he's like, this dude is nuts. Like, that's the face he has of like, what is this guy doing? Like, we're in the middle of a fight and he's just crying with a smile on his face.
It's it is bizarre. It's wild. So good. Okay, any other bonus stuff on your end that you want to bring up?
That is it for me.
Okay, all right. Let's go on to our favorite character moment. Our favorite character or favorite character moment. But Sam, why don't you take us off? Because I am still deciding.
Okay. For me, I just said the second years as a whole. And let me explain why. The reason why I lumped them together is because of the way that they really work as a unit. I love it. I like absolutely love it. They make a plan with the first years, train them, and hope for the best at the event. Like, the third years can't go. They've been kicked out. So they're like, okay, we need to bring some other people in. And they go out of their way to, like, get these first years prepared. Now, they could have just said, like, hey, you want to help us out at the event and just throw them at Toto and see what happens. But they didn't. Like, and you'll see in the next episode how prepared Megumi and Nobara are with their new skills. Like, you do get to see them using those in the next couple episodes. And it's really great. But then at the last minute, the first years find out that there is this other, or sorry, the second years find out that there is another first year that just was, you know, dead for 2 months. That adds a bigger mess to their already screwed up situation that they are just going into this year. And they abandon, for the most part, the event objective so that they can make sure that Yuji doesn't die. So not only are they thrown this first year, the first year ends up causing like a really big problem, and then they need to go rescue him.
Yeah.
And they just do it in such a good-natured way. They're like, okay, we take him into the pack. He's now in the pack. We're going to protect him like one of the pack members. And they don't know him, but they trust Megumi and Nobara's judgments on how good of a person Yuji is. And I feel like that takes a lot of trust. And I loved it. Loved it.
You know what? I love that you said it that way. Yeah, they do earn some props. Now, I think that since you did the second years, I think I'm going to make my favorite character. I can't remember who I did last week. It might be a repeat. I'm pretty sure it's a repeat. It's going to be Yuji Itadori. Mm-hmm. Because, like, literally he was presumed dead. And during that time, he has been on missions. He literally made a friend after being isolated for a long time. And then that friend just like died right in front of him. And mm-hmm. it's kind of rocking his world. And then he comes back to his other friends and it's just not the way he planned. But he is very good natured about it once he, you know, shakes it off a little bit, and he just is ready to go. He's game to be a part of this event, and he makes the most of it. And yeah, so I think I have to give it to Yuji. He's just been a really good sport up until this point, and
he's had it so rough.
He really has. When you break it down like that, I mean, and especially if you remember that he is a high school student, like a high school boy, mm-hmm. that also plays a big role in, like, you know, how he's dealt with the friendships, the isolation, being received back by others. It's just, you know, poor kid. But
yeah,
he also has made a new friend, whether he wants to or not. Toto.
I feel like that's still up for debate. Like, Toto is all in, and we haven't had confirmation from Yuji yet as to, like, if he's reciprocating.
Honestly, though, I would be the same way, too. I'd be like, you look like you are just, like, you know,
one cookie short of a cookie jar?
Yeah.
Or whatever you want.
One crayon missing from the pack. I don't know. I'm making up. But, you know, I'd be very leery of him. So, yeah.
For sure.
But, okay. Well, I think that is a wrap. So, everyone, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we love that you are listening along to the Little Bit Weebish podcast and joining us for our Jujutsu Kaisen discussions. Now, if you'd like to support the podcast, the best way to do that is to share it with a friend. You know, have them watch Jujutsu Kaisen with you. Have them listen to the podcast with you. It all helps us. Or you can give us a review on either Spotify, just hit the number of stars you want to hit, or give us a review on Apple Podcast. All of it helps us out so much. Now, next week, we'll be covering episodes 16 through 18. Be sure to watch those ahead of time and join us again. And of course, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Send us an email at littlebitweebish@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram or TikTok, although I will admit, I prefer Instagram. I think it's obvious. Now, thank you, everyone, so much, and we will see you next week.
Bye.